You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome, everyone, to Token Theater Friends. I am so happy to be talking to all of you today. It's Women's History Month, and it's an honor for me as a cis male to be spending my time talking about the incredible work that all of you do. So thank you really for doing this. Now we can get started by talking about 7 Minutes. So can you tell me a little bit about what 7 Minutes is, and for the actors, who do you play in the play?
I guess I could launch it off. I'm Mayanne Teo, I use they, she pronouns. And 7 Minutes is a play written by Stefano Massini, who also wrote the Lehman Trilogy. It was commissioned by Waterwell. So this is the first time this play is going to be heard in English. And we're landing it here in the United States. And the premise of it is really a powder keg. 10 women are waiting in a break room. Their factory had been bought over by foreign investors. They don't know what's going to happen. They are not sure if they still have a job. They're not sure if they still have health insurance. They're not sure if their shifts have been cut. And so they wait with anxiety. And when finally the representative, the spokesperson comes back, Linda, they ask her, what is the case? And she says, is the factory going to close down? No, the factory's not going to close down. Are we going to lose this? No, you're going to not lose this. The only thing that will change is this one condition, and that our 15-minute break will be cut by 7 minutes. And the play really takes off from there. So it is a play that is about collective action and all the things that thwart us towards collective action. It is a play that's like really looking at these incredible 11 characters and their lives. And it's not as much about ideas as about realities. The realities of workers, the realities of all of us who have to use our hands and bodies to make a living, and what it goes through. And so that's just from my perspective. I'm going to pass it to Ebony, who plays Linda, the spokesperson.
Yes, hello, Ebony Marshall Oliver here. I, as Mayanne said, I play Linda in the play. Linda is the spokesperson. Linda is the person who was in the meeting with the suits, as they are called. This play is about collective action and what does it mean to really go deeper in, like, what are they really asking? What do they really want? They say 7 minutes, but really, is that all there is? Let's really think about, you know, what 7 minutes might mean in the bigger picture.
Hi, my name is Nicole Ansari. I play an Iranian immigrant called Mahtab. Mahtab is a highly skilled worker in the factory, very proud of her work. She came to the United States a little over a decade ago, and she really is the voice of those who just want to hold on to the job. So she is, I don't want to give anything away. So she says little in the beginning of the play, and there comes a point where she can't hold it any longer. So there's a little bit of a shift happening in strategy to make sure that we don't lose our jobs. I'm originally I'm German Iranian American, and this character has become really dear to my heart. Although she has very little to do with me personally, there's something about this character that is just, I don't know, has gotten into me. And I'm going to pass it on to Jojo.
Hi, I'm Jojo Brown, and I play Jordan in 7 minutes. Jordan is, she's very serious. She's one of the weavers in the factory, and she doesn't care about things that she doesn't know about, and she doesn't know about things she doesn't care about. And she very much likes to have work be work and life be life separate from that, and doesn't like to think very hard. But in the events of this play, all of these women are in a situation where on a time crunch, they're grappling with a very hard false choice that they've been given from the people who have power in their factory. And a lot of conflict arises, and all of these women are coming from different places, whether that be different places in the world or different places spiritually and emotionally. And it really, I feel, is about how taking care of a collective that you're a part of benefits everybody, and it benefits you as an individual. And it's about that sort of fight between taking care of yourself as an individual and your collective.
Previous start on the 17th. So obviously other than the people involved, no one has seen the play yet, but reading the play, I got the impression that it's almost like a ticking bomb of a thing. And I felt that if someone had given me like the actual paper script, I did feel like, oh God, this is going to explode at any moment. I wonder, May Anne, if that is the way that you approached it as a director.
Thanks for that question. I felt the same when I received it. I was just at the edge of like my bed. You know, I just remember like reading and then going, oh, what is going to happen? What's happening here? What will be there? And I want to say that when I first read it, I was going through directing at a place that was going through a lot of problems, and that actually subsequently shut down because I left the production. And the reason why I was able to leave that production in a very toxic environment was because when I read this play, I started to ask myself the same questions, and the play started to actually work inside of me. Like that ticking bomb started to actually work inside of me of like, what are we really doing? What are we standing up for? Who do we, like I'm the director. If I leave, what happens to the actors? But maybe I need to actually be able to say, if I can leave, you can too, right? Like, what is it about our decisions that we make ourselves that can affect the whole? And I think that that was actually the first thing that happened inside of me of what does it mean for us to, so I think that that is actually core to what I was interested in for the group. That like, what does it actually mean to us? What are the stakes for you? And all of the complicated things that we have to grapple as human beings when we make any decision in our lives. Any decision that we make can and will affect so many other people, not just our families, not just our colleagues, but beyond that. And we can see that playing out in the world right now. You know, we're in World War III. That's actually happening right now. And all of that comes from small decisions that grow into big decisions. So I think that that is actually, I think, the core of that. And I do think that, like, yes, the tension's high because the stakes start high and then they get higher. The stakes are high and then they get higher.
I just want to tune in there because when I read the play, I immediately knew I wanted to be part of it. And luckily I had a friend who knew Mayan, so she was raving about Mayan. I was like, okay, I'm just going to put it out there and hope, you know, gladly I got cast. I got offered a Mahtab. When I entered the rehearsal room, it was within, I don't know, minutes that I felt I was in a room that was very special, that was a true holding of a new paradigm shift in making theater, in making art. I knew we had at the helm Mayan, who was holding the room and giving space to everybody's needs without it becoming chaos, but actually with people voicing their needs. So that whole idea of, you know, I come from European theater tradition where the director is king and queen, and where you basically like hope that your head doesn't get chopped off, you know. And I've worked in many different places, so it's not always like that. But there is a sense of hierarchy that is debilitating ultimately for the creative process. And about a year ago, I directed something, and I wanted to make sure, and it was with all women, that I wanted to try to direct it in a feminine flow, in a way that is more embracing of everybody's needs and is more organic in nature. And I made the decision then and there, this is how I want to work. So this is the kind of work that I want to attract. And then this came, and I'm in the room, and literally, like, I have goosebumps just talking about it. I love every person in that room. It is astonishing. Like, I pinch myself every day going to rehearsals. And instead of feeling like, oh God, I'm 5 minutes late, they're gonna hate me and I'm unprofessional, I go, I don't wanna be 5 minutes late because I don't wanna miss anything. I don't wanna miss the warm up. I don't wanna miss the checking in with each other. Yeah, and I have a feeling that the audience will feel that bond that we've created off stage, on stage. With on stage, of course, there's tension, very, very different. It's not about loving each other, it's quite the opposite. But then there is this bond, and I think it's a big treat for people.
Which, to that, may I say, it's been such a blessing to work with these people. I'm truly obsessed with and inspired by everybody in this cast. And it's also, in that same regard, as an actor, been a challenge for that reason, because we're not necessarily always very kind to each other or nice to each other in this play. so it's been quite challenging to step into having such conflict each day that we're playing out on the stage with people that I love so much. What really struck me about the play, capitalism does not value human bodies in the same way that it values profit. So when participating in capitalism, we're constantly asked, even in the tiniest of ways, to ignore the needs of our bodies. And when this play starts, it's in the middle of a long work day for some people, or after a long work day. And truly we are going through it. And the truth is, people who are often marginalized or minoritized really, really bear the brunt, not only of that expectation that will ignore our bodies for the needs of production, but that we will also save everybody who needs to be saved from that. And that really, this play has a cast of Black and Brown and Asian people, all women and gender nonconforming people in the cast. And originally, the way it was written, that was not necessarily the writer's intent. It was based on a bunch of women in France, mostly French women, with a few characters being from places outside of France. And it was just, the piece itself was so exciting to me. And I knew that May Ann was directing it. And I know that May Ann does a lot of work with casts of predominantly Black and Brown and Asian and Indigenous people and women and trans people, a lot of casts with other trans people. So I was like, this is gonna be radical. This is gonna be awesome. And what a lovely, it's like, you know, I am here in the United States participating in capitalism, but to be able to sort of turn that and for audiences to be able to sort of see the critique on that is exciting as an actor for me.
What drew me to the play as I read it, first of all, I read it from start to finish, like without taking a break. And normally I have way too much going on that I will start and stop. And okay, I gotta fix dinner, or I have to go do this, or I have to do that. I didn't do that with this one. Actually, I take that back. I was actually on set when I got it. And I started, and like after the first two pages, I was like, oh no, I need to sit with this one. This is not one that I can just look, you know, and like take a break. And so at the end of my day, when I got back to my hotel, I opened my iPad and I read it from start to finish. And it excited me. And I had all the same questions, like with the characters as I was reading. I was like, it's 7 minutes. Y'all tripping. It's 7 minutes. What are you and it wasn't until, you know, I continued reading and I was like, oh shit. This is not what they say it is. Oh, they are getting over. And it then started, you know, making me think about this country that we live in and the things that are asked of us that seem simple, and they really aren't when you sit down and look at it for real and count the cost, what it's going to cost, not just monetarily, but like physically, emotionally, spiritually, what is it going to cost for this one little small thing, that small thing that you are asking of us? So that's what excited me about it.
When I read about the play at this production, the first thing that I thought was, this is the kind of theater that was promised to us after the pandemic started, after Black Lives Matter, and after the murder of George Floyd, you know, led to a rightful uprising and people demanding that everyone has equal rights and that everyone is treated with dignity, respect, compassion, and kindness. However, in so many ways, theater and the arts in general have not really, you know, kept their promises. So for all of you as beings off the stage, what are some non-negotiables when you came back to work and you decided, I am not going to let this happen to me anymore?
For me, it was actually, I was offered to do a Zoom reading of a play that had at its heart some indigenous stories and characters. And when I saw the cast list, they it makes me laugh because it was so ludicrous. A lot of them were really Anglo-Saxon. I mean, like, really white. And, you know, I said to the director, I don't understand. This play is not about Anglo-Saxons. Why did you cast? Oh, these are wonderful actors. And, you know, you are our diversity. And I said to her, I'm sorry, but I can't be part of this production. I can't. This is not right. This is not okay. And the director, really, like, she screamed at me and she said, you're going to turn this down just because it's just on Zoom? And when we do the production, and I said, no. The value and the way you set up something starts in a Zoom, starts before the Zoom, starts when you are reading something. And, you know, and she accused me of being precious and of being this and that and of calling her a racist. And I mean, it was ridiculous, but I thought, wow, this is really, really embarrassing that people, you know, like, it, yes, it was done. At one point in history, that was normal. It was never okay, but it was normal. It was the norm. But we are at a point, and I love that this is happening, where it's about true visibility and equity. And I'm so excited to be part of it.
For me, coming back after all of those events and COVID and all of the things, I was fortunate enough to come back into a space where I got to be a part of telling a story about Black people from our perspective without any kind of input from anyone else not associated with our perspective and how we just exist in our bodies and exist in the United States in our bodies. And I'm interested in being able to just be in my body and operate how I operate based on how I've had to operate in this country and it not be questioned. And I can, you know, and we can just be. And I don't have to explain my being. And one of the things that I am so thrilled about with this production and what specifically and what Mayanne, the room that Mayanne has created for us, is that we are all allowed to just be and not have to explain our being. We're just being. And we're all from different backgrounds. And it's a beautiful, it's a stew. It's not a melting pot. It's a stew. Because when you make a stew, you still know that you have a carrot. That's a carrot. That's a potato. They still taste and they still function as what they are, but they are together in this stew. And so I am excited about this stew, and I'm excited about being, when this is over, being in other spaces where it is a stew and we can all be different, because that's what makes us thrive, because we can learn from everyone. So I'm no longer accepting that I have to shrink so that I'm not seen as whatever. I'm just going to be me and take up space. And I don't really take up a lot of space, honestly. I'm an observer by nature. And so I don't really take up a whole bunch of space anyway, but when I'm ready to take up space, I would like to do it.
Wow, I was like, that's the question, really good question. I was like, wow, just hearing it articulated that way. Before agreeing to do this project, I had a conversation with May Ann about how disillusioned I was about our industry and theater in New York, theater everywhere, and how just frustrated and distrustful I felt because of what looked to me like performative promises from large institutions. So it was just honestly when I got the audition for this play, I was like, a play right now? Like, I don't know if I can do that. I was really scared, but I read the play and I was like, well, that would be mighty ironic if this play about women of color working together and you know, fighting against their company or their institution to, you know, or just dealing with the messiness of that. I was like, that would be mighty ironic if this subject matter didn't also come with a process and a culture of really validating our needs as workers, because we are artists, but at the end of the day, like, this is a job, right? And you know, and we have our unions, and I just, for me, it's a hard question because I've experienced a lot of very traumatic things in the industry, and I've been working in theater since I was a kid, and for me, I would say that today, like, my non-negotiables are like, you know, I will not be token, I will not be tokenized. And I can't ever be in a space where I am just absolutely silenced and don't have somebody there who is a part of my community in a position of power that I can navigate through the difficulty of that with. So that's, you know, that for me is currently the non-negotiable.
I don't get out of bed if it doesn't change culture in some way. I don't get out of bed. So I think coming out of that, it was so clear to me that our time here is so precious with each other. You know, I spent five months of the pandemic with my family at home in Singapore, and it's the first time I've stayed with them for that amount of time since I was 20. And so, like, every moment I spend here in the United States is time away from my family. I hope you are with your family right now, Jose. And I think about, like, all of the things that are, you know, there's a moment where Linda says something in play of like, 7 minutes might not be much, but they are ours. They're ours. And that is what we have. We have, like, our breath. We have, like, you know, time. That is what we've been gifted for our life by whoever you think is gifting it to you. So what are we actually going to do it for? And for me, it is about being awake to each other and to ourselves. And I'm not interested in doing anything that doesn't do that. And so, you know, is it often that I say yes to playwrights who are Caucasian and European ancestry? No. I don't. And when this came in, I started to think of like, well, how would I cast this and how would I land this here in the United States? And as we started to get deeper in it, you know, one of the first conversations I had with Waterwell, the producers, was I think this cast has to be all of our, of actors of the global majority. It has to be. And they were like, really, you know, these are some things. And I said, you know what? Don't worry, white supremacy and whiteness will be there, whether or not white actors are. We will be pushing up against that no matter what. And they really heard me and they were like, do it, go for it. Because I really had a vision of like this play about collective action, you know, that comes from the real story of a French factory, has so much resonance here in all of the stories that are not told here. So the text actually envisions immigrants being against collective action because of how much they've given up to cross over. And one of the scholars that Francesca and Lee, who were adapting and translating the piece, got notes on was actually immigrants in the United States are always at the forefront of collective action. It is not true, that perception. And so I started to think about that. I started to think about like, okay, well, what are the characters that are talking about that? What are the points that can actually be seen in the way we understand and the perception of immigrants and collective action that haven't been actually, you know, represented by the media? How can we actually look at the stories that are real to our history that are erased constantly? So one of the things I knew, I was like, I think, you know, I was like, the person who has to call us into action has to be a Black woman. Has to be. It's, and you know, we met Elise Bryant, incredible president of Women's Labor Union. And she was just so powerful. She really spoke to us in such a deep way. And I thought to myself, oh my God, like it's as if we cast Ebony to be Elise. The real to the real, you know? This is not an act of imagination. This is an act of reclamation. And the way in which, you know, it's actually very carefully casted. So in terms of like who turns next and for what reason, we really thought about intersectionality and the identities of folks and how, you know, what it means for a South Asian to have a child who's also in the factory with her. What does that mean? So we really have, I think, in this piece, added an immense amount of the way we're thinking about race and gender now, in this moment, to the levels of the play that are already there. And we just added so much more that are resonating in a way that I think is pertinent to the conversation and the zeitgeist of the moment.
The humanity of each and every one of these women just like jumps from the page to the point where I was reading the script and I kept thinking, I am so worried because I want all of these women to go home and find a way to either get a massage or go binge something they like or take care of themselves, because this is like one hell of a, you know, thing they're getting out of. So for all of you, I'm so glad that you have community and that you have a network and that you have a space where you feel safe. But what would be, knowing what you know now, what would be your self-care advice, I would say, rituals that you use now that you didn't have before that you would want to share with young women who are either getting started or who haven't gotten into the performing arts because they don't know they're allowed to because they're scared of everything that they've heard about the field?
I would say to find your village. I have a small village of people who are in the industry that we can just be 100% honest. We can be 100% vulnerable. And we hold each other for whatever the moment is, whatever the moment needs. I'm sometimes the one who's catching whatever it is. And then sometimes it's my friend, if I need to, you know, do whatever. I have found my village. When we get together, we call it an iron sharpens iron meeting, is what we call it. Because I always, leaving that fellowship, I always feel I'm lighter, I'm encouraged, I feel like, okay, we can keep going in this crazy industry we decided to be a part of. Because we put ourselves through so much physically and emotionally. I know for me, this thing, Linda, I am worn out by the time I get home. I am like worn completely out. And I come home and I, you know, lately I've been like, sleep. I got one just waiting on me. As soon as this is over, I'm digging in. I have snacks, but like now it's sugary snacks. I need something that I enjoy so that I can relax my mind, and I'll watch something silly on TV. And something that I don't have to like think to watch it. It can just be there and be there for entertainment and entertain me. So I would say for self-care, for me, I would find a village of people that you trust and that you know love you and have your back no matter what, that you can like bounce some things off of and move forward in this industry.
Oh, I absolutely love this, Ebony. And I am so with you. I think community is so, so important. I actually created an online community for actors called Actors Rising. I had my whole life since I was 18, has been really the two pillars of my life have been acting and my spiritual life. And for a long time, I didn't know how to navigate both of them. I would, you know, go into like a silent retreat, but then, you know, would dread having to go back on stage or to the set and didn't know how to marinate the two. And I found a way, it eventually came together as one. And I feel that we actors really are, and I know this might sound like cultural appropriation, but we are shamans. What does a shaman do? Shaman unites the manifest with the unmanifest, with spirit. And that's what we're doing. And that's what artists are doing in a way. So, you know, hopefully I'll find a better name for that, or maybe somebody has an idea. But radical self-care, radical self-love and acceptance, I think that's really where it starts. One of the things I see in our industry is that isolation. When we go into character, those who take this serious, you know, something happens that is not always predictable. It can get really dark, depending on who your character is. And so we learn from teachers how to get into character, but nobody teaches you how to get out of character. So I found rituals and ways for myself, because I suffered a lot from like staying in character. And for some reason in my career, I've worked with a lot of people, male and female, but a lot of males actually, who committed suicide. And that really made me think, how much we and society take for granted the risk we as performers are taking of going into another person. It is a dangerous act. It is a risky act. And I think the best way to deal with it is making your person outside of character really loved and really strong, and find a village, find a community where you can be yourself and where you can come with everything that you are, with your light and with your dark and with everything. I wholeheartedly agree. And when this interview is over, I'm going to head over and get a nice massage.
My whole life, I've known that I wanted to act. I haven't really known how to do too many other things in my life. And I take this craft so seriously. Like, to me, it is a craft that has technique, and it's my job. And because so much of my identity is wrapped up in what I do in that way, it's easy to conflate work with life. And when the pandemic started, I really faced that. When industry shut down and when work stopped happening, I was like, wow, so much of how I define myself, how I have my value and my worth and my stimulation is just completely wrapped up in this one thing. And not to put a value judgment on that, that's fine and dandy, because acting, you can do it, you know, you can do it without money, you can do it without producers, you can get together with people who want to do the same thing as you and do it. But at the end of the day, it is my job. So like, I've really been learning to have boundaries with that. And, you know, I love that Mayan brought up like this theme in the play of like these 7 minutes being hours. And it's also, you know, a big thing that those 7 minutes add up. I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but I also want to say that like I'm descendant from Filipino people, and there is a long time history and current tradition of Filipino people having as much labor extracted from their bodies as possible. Even, you know, in the pandemic, we saw how many of the frontline workers in healthcare were Filipino women, working as nurses and other healthcare providers, and just undervalued and overworked. And I don't want to look back at my life and only remember work. So for me, for every minute spent working, I try to spend 2 minutes sleeping. The math probably doesn't math out that way, but it is very important to me that if I could sleep every day, all day for a week, if I have the ability to do that, I'll do that. And so rest, family, and nature for me are especially nature, because we only have so much time. It's scary what's happening to our earth, and we can't take care of the earth unless we have that relationship with it, and unless we go out, for those of us who can, and touch the earth. So I love like being in nature, really, and sleeping and spending time with family. That's my self-care.
Yes to all of these. I'd like to contribute that probably the greatest contributor to my anxiety and stress is my mind. Fear, anxiety, shame, all of that. It's like programmed, you know, as an Asian femme. It's like, boom, there you go. Welcome. And I think that one of the biggest things I do for self-care is meditation and study. Just being able to Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a teacher, wonderful teacher of Buddhist teachings, recently passed. And since he passed, I've just been going deeper into the way he talks about the Heart Sutra, the way he talks about a lot of teachings. And it, I find it incredibly freeing to study in pieces and then be able to sort of like bring it into the way I approach the world, right? So it it's almost as if like I have to sit at the feet of in order to function. And that actually has been a big part of my practice in the last few months. And being able to sit for half an hour every morning with a group of people who we've been sitting together for more than a year at a particular time, and we just sit and we do some dynamic breathing and we pull a tarot card from the Osho deck, and it really sort of clarifies my intention of the day in a way that is fully embodied and in community. So
Ebony, Jojo, May Anne, Nicole, it has been a true pleasure and an honor to spend this time with you. Thank you so much for your words and your candor, your honesty, and the work that you do at Break a Leg. 7 minutes runs from March 17th through April 10th. And you can find more information, including how to get tickets, if you go to waterwell.org. All of that is going to be in our show notes as well. Thank you all so much for this. It's been a joy.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.